The seminar was recorded in May 2006. Any comments relating to charts and timing, I just want you to know that that's the reference date. So keep that in mind. If any of the comments talk about the foreclosures or where we were in pricing, just so you know, 2006 in May is when we recorded it. Now, what we're going to talk about today is negotiating. And in this course, what I've decided to do was separate the two skills, and we'll talk about both of them. Because when you are talking directly to an owner, I believe you have to have what I call one-call closer skills. You're going to probably get that house purchased the first time you meet or never. But the phase that's coming up, we are going to be able to build relationships. And that is a different sequence. And I've done both of those. And so we have separate chapters to tell you how you approach those people that control inventory. It's an easier job to build relationships over time than it is to meet with new people, get trusted, close them, and get them to hand you their house. Both skills are necessary depending on the market that we find ourselves in. Now, I do think that you can prepare yourself well in advance to understand the sequence that's likely to occur. But what you don't want to do is turn into a con man. And that's the difference. And one of the things that Ben has in one of his books at the very end is something called Sales Infiltrator, and I'm sure he'll talk about that tomorrow. But it's really the goal of these 2 days to end up getting you to see to peek at the skills that probably are necessary, but also to create the character to only use them when appropriate. And by that I mean, let me just give you an example. One of my favorite moments in the seminar business for me, I spoke with A.D. Kessler and a couple of other gentlemen in front of an audience, and then we had a question and answer at the end. And somebody came up and they took the mic and they said, I'm going to direct this one to Bruce. He said, I'm meeting with a woman in her 70s tomorrow at a nursing home about her property that she has. How do I approach it? And I said, well, I said, you do what is ever in her best interest. And he said, no, really. And that was my truthful answer, because it is how I would approach it. Is it ever appropriate for us to buy a 78-year-old woman's house that's in a nursing home? The answer is, it might very well be. It might be that there's no harm done. As a matter of fact, it might be, in fact, a service. But why don't we have the character to find out if this is a good time to do that, or you know what, we'll plug in the other things that we know are options and let her choose from a multitude of choices. See, I'd rather do that. Let's start looking at the book, page 3. Part of the difference between the people that can do this business on a consistent basis and the people that can't has to do with the character qualities of who's in the business. On page 3, number 1, successful negotiators have a positive attitude. And part of that is because they believe deals are possible. There's going to be a lot of people that you meet in this business, brokers and lenders and so forth, that think that our propositions are ridiculous. And it really helps to have bought a few hundred or many hundreds of houses at this point, because their opinion of it not being possible doesn't mean a thing to me. It's too late for that. I already know it's possible, so they're entitled to their opinion, but it doesn't affect me. Successful negotiators believe they have value in the marketplace. I understand that I have a proposition that in some cases is a great service. So if someone else disagrees with that or not, that's okay, but it doesn't change how I feel. Successful negotiators expect to get their share. And I think that comes into play where we're not afraid that there's competition. The real successful buyers actually associate with other successful buyers. They don't necessarily view them as competition. They talk about war stories together. They share experiences, and they get better because of it. The effect of having a positive attitude in this business is you keep on trying until you get what you come for. Sometimes people that haven't been successful at this business think of the people that have been successful as not going through the pains that they're going through by not buying houses. And I guess by that I mean we all do, let's say, 2,000 mailers and we get 10 or 20 phone calls. That's it. It means we've had 1,980 failures. There's somebody that held our envelope and went, nah. It's what you do with the 20 phone calls that matter. And the people that are successful close a portion of those, but we all have those times where it doesn't work. So you keep on trying. We're going to put together another newsletter, and I'm going to share this story. Mike would not mind, even though he's not here. Mike Cantu is one of the best buyers there is in our business. He related a story to me recently, and it was just kind of funny because he bought the house, but he lost the negotiation, and it was just, it's funny, and I'm glad he shared it with me. He met with a woman at her house, which is rare. Mike doesn't usually go to houses. He met her and he was willing in his mind to pay $240 for the house, but he started his offer at $218. The woman was in her 70s, and she said, basically, Mike, when you leave, you're going to pay me $240 for my house. So Mike went into, you know, a shtick and said, well, because of this and this, I can get it up to $225. The lady says this. This is a classic. Mike, if you're going to act like a turd, go lay in the yard. She then proceeds to get up, and he's in the dinette. She goes to the kitchen and begins to fix him oatmeal. Not a word is being said. She's fixing him oatmeal. Mike doesn't know what else to do, so he just sits there quietly going through his day timer. In about 5 minutes, I guess that's how long thick oatmeal takes to produce itself, it plops in front of his face and she says, eat it, you need it. Well, dutifully, Mike began to try to eat his oatmeal. The problem was when he stuck his spoon in, the whole bowl came up. True story. So he said, I wedged a piece of it off and put it in my mouth. When she turned around, I put it underneath my paperwork. And then she left the room. He said, I started playing with the oatmeal, and I put the bowl upside down as she turned the corner. Anyway, he once again tried to negotiate her down from $240, and she said, Mike, $240 is the number. He says, well, and so he acquiesced to the $240 and bought a house. It doesn't always go easy for the best of the best, but he hung in there until he got it done. And so sometimes that's what it takes. You keep on trying. A very special person is somebody that can get encouraged by someone else's success, even though they may not be having any of their own. And I think that's an important thing. My least favorite sentence in life when I talk to somebody, and I rarely try to mention good things that are going on in my life except for a little small circle, because I find that it upsets some people. But the sentence is, it must be nice. It must be nice. I have a friend, Alex, who owns about 200 St. Gaudens gold coins. They're worth a lot today. And it's a very inappropriate sentence to say to Alex, well, it must be nice, because he's owned those things for about 6 years. And a lot of people that are successful, what they do, have earned the right to get there. And so when somebody says that it must be nice statement, I know that they're missing something. They don't know how to be encouraged by the fact that it's possible. See, you should think and look around and go, look at this. People are buying wholesale deals, and I guess that's an advantage of owning a loan business where we fund your guys' deals, is that every week I know it's still possible. Oh yeah, there's another one, okay. And so to me that's encouraging. The effect of a positive attitude is also you affect other people in a positive way. And so to surround yourself with people that are positive, very important. So how to improve a bad attitude? Hang around people who are successfully doing the business. When I first began at Sierra Realty, the very first day I spent all day on the phone cold calling. No script, no training, there's the phone, good luck. Mike Barron was the best buyer at the company at the time. He listened to me talk, because I was in a room pretty much adjacent to him. At the end of the day, he said to me, he said, Bruce, you're going to do phenomenal at this business. He said, I have one piece of advice. Hang around only me. The rest of the guys think it's hard. Very good advice. because those guys did nothing. Together, four or five other buyers did 20% of the business, and Mike and I did the rest. And it was because they talked together about how hard it was instead of how profitable it was. And it was very good advice. So hang around people that are successful. Learn more about the business. Fill the gaps in that cost you money. The great buyers in this business are not lazy people. They analyze every conversation they have. They literally hang up the phone and think about what they did right or wrong and plug that into the next conversation. When they have an escrow, they think the same way. When they have an experience of buying a home and fixing it, they analyze the transaction so they know the next one will go better. Do you do that? I don't do that. I'm impressed. I mean, I'm a little lazy sometimes, but I understand that the people that are successful really pay attention to details, and they get rewarded for it. Because what that means is the next time I buy a property, I'm actually investing all the experiences of hundreds of transactions into the next one. And if you're making conscious thought about what went on in a conversation, it means that you're investing all of your experience in hundreds of conversations into the next one. Jim Rohn says in one of his seminars, a lot of people think they have 10 years experience, but what they have is 1 year experience 10 times over, because they never have built any building blocks upon each other. And so it's real important to pay attention to each conversation and each transaction to make progress. And when you do make the progress, give yourself a little credit and maybe do something special for yourself. Have a goal in advance that when you reach something, that you'll reward yourself. Number two, successful negotiators have courage. They understand that taking risks is part of the business, and they have a deaf ear when they get told no. Top of page four, they attempt to close a number of times after being told no. My best friend lives in Florida. His name is Alex. It is just fun to have someone say no to him because the game is on. It is so much fun because, and I wish I could just break in and just tell the person, this is not going to work out well for you. You might as well just do it, because we are going to get a yes if it takes a lot longer than you have. I have seen Alex do this. He just simply doesn't understand no. It doesn't attach. He'll ask the same question 10 different ways, and that person will not recognize that that's just occurred. And finally, through skill or through just persistence, he ends up getting a yes answer. What's funny about Alex is that he could never teach you how to do what he does. He has no idea what he does. He just does it. And it's interesting to see somebody with that skill that I've asked him, well, how do you view what you do? What do you mean? It's sort of cultural, I think. Just like Tony Alvarez, Alex is Cuban. And there may be something about that, that they can just talk. But it's fun to watch him. They're not afraid to ask for the order. When I went into the business 25 years ago, I wrote offer after offer after offer. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't even hardly know how to fill out the paperwork, but hundreds and hundreds of offers went out every week, and I bought a lot of properties. I am sure that that is why, because I was not skillful in the real estate business. But I was persistent, and I was willing to work very hard. So everyone that was breathing that owned a house that looked like it might have a chance to be bought at a discount had an offer. Now, do you think that that let me in for easy months? Have you ever made an offer to one person that isn't happy because it's too low? I had hundreds of them calling me up, asking for my boss. Did I care? No. I was in the mindset of, who cares? Here's my boss. He owns the company. It's okay. He wants me to buy him wholesale. And so it didn't bother me. So don't be afraid to ask for what you need. We're not afraid to be unpopular for a short period of time. I was negotiating one time on a 7,000 square foot house in Orange County. Beautiful area. It was on Ciron Drive. Norris spelled backwards, almost. Right at the end is at the end. And I presented an offer, and the guy was, he owned a very large company. He says, I need to meet with my accountant tomorrow and go over this with him to see if the numbers work out. And I felt that that was probably a legitimate request, and so I said, okay. Well, I came back, and we then had a very brief 15-second meeting. I met with my accountant. He says the offer stinks. Get lost. That was the short version of it. Well, I went home, but you know what? I really didn't believe that the accountant had given my offer a fair shake. And what I did while I was watching a UCLA basketball game, and I don't know why I remember that, but it was a title game that they ended up winning, I decided that I would pursue that one more time. And I wrote a 7-page sequential scenario of what to do with the net from his money. When I came into his office, he said, I thought I told you I wasn't interested. I said, you told me you weren't interested based on false information from your accountant. If you spend 10 seconds looking at this, you'll decide differently. I bought his house. That felt good. And so sometimes in this business, you have to stand up for your offer, be unpopular for a short period of time. And if you do that, the effect of having courage is you end up closing the close ones. Usually feel, and if I don't buy a property after I have met with somebody, I want to feel at the very least that there's no one else that would have bought it either in our business. I want to feel that I have tried my very best and I was skillful enough to get as far as I could. Someone used to taking risks kind of gets a thrill out of it after a while. You don't fear it anymore, you kind of thrive on it. When I was first introduced to the company Sierra Realty in 1980 or 81, I had never been one of those people that asked for a discount on anything. I really didn't know that world existed. When we started buying houses at a big discount, I started to play with it like it was a new toy. And I would go into whatever I was going to go into. I would go in to buy a suit, and I would at the time the chalk was in midair, I would ask them, which rack can I pick my free shirt and tie from? Things like that. We'd go into the furniture store, and the guy would have his pad out. Now, I never abused it because I was really there to buy, but I was also there to test my new toy. If I buy all of this, which set of tables can I get free? The next sound you heard was Marsha leaving the store in embarrassment. It was too much for her to take as I walked around with this new toy. Now, I don't do that anymore. I feel there are some people, let's see, it's like I have an energy grid, and it only wants to go to work when there are tens of thousands of dollars at stake. That's about how it feels. I only want to roll out my arsenal when it really is going to make a difference. I've been with Alex when we've sat in line for a free movie ticket that was rightfully his, and we held up people for 20 minutes. And see, I think that's silly. I showed him what that looked like one day. We went into Del Taco. I got a Diet Coke, asked for easy ice, sat down and drank it. And before we left, we came around, and I said, Alex, just a minute. I said, I need to speak to the manager. And Alex is kind of looking at me, and I opened the glass. I said, I had asked for easy ice, and it was kind of more than I wanted, so can I get another free one? And Alex is just kind of just looking at me like, I've never seen you do this. And as we left, he said, what was all that about? I said, I just wanted you to know what you look like all the time as you roll your great skill out in minor things. So maybe save it up for a big thing. How to improve your improve your courage is practice without pressure. I think that's one of the most important things I can give you permission to do, is to make phone calls to sellers and not be afraid to make a fool of yourself, because you know what? If you hang up, they don't know where you live. They have no idea where you came from, and you can use it as a learning experience. Successful negotiators learn to think on their feet. They have the ability to deal with unexpected sellers' responses. And this is one of the things that I've always had a difficulty with thinking about using scripts, is because I have never yet met a seller that cooperated with the whole system. But obviously, I'm wrong on that, and very interested in understanding that you can have a script in place that you know how to go back to every time a seller diverts you off of it. And I'm very excited to understand that, because if that is one of the keys that's missing for us, I think it could make a big difference to a lot of people. Successful negotiators can come up with creative solutions to real estate problems. A lot of times when you buy properties or you put a property in escrow, that's not the end of the deal. There's escrow fallouts because of odd reasons along the way. One of my early purchases, and some of you have heard the story, but I didn't even know what a trust deed was during this time, but how we funded deals is just like what Craig does for the Norris Group. People put private money into loans, and I had bought a property that was worth about $600,000 for about $350,000 in Orange County, and the escrow was supposed to close the next day. I was informed the morning or the evening of 2 days before that the money hadn't even been collected. They said that I was going to have to do that personally. Now, I'm going out to collect $350,000 from 16 different people, 20-some thousand dollars a pop. And these people were stretched out from San Diego to the Valley, and I had to do it all in one day. I didn't even know what a trust deed was. And I'm supposed to explain all this to somebody. So I realize I have to get it done, though, because if I don't get it done, I don't get paid 3% on that purchase, which is a lot of money. And so I'm a very motivated guy. I get up in the morning and I get to the first house between 3:30 and 4 a.m. It was a gated house. There was no guard there. And I really sat there for a couple of minutes thinking, what am I going to do? Am I just going to leave his trust deed paperwork by the gate and call him later and say, I left your paperwork outside? It didn't seem like a good solution, so I pushed the buzzer and woke up this family. When the guy responded to that, he says, "Who in the blank is this?" And I said, "This is Bruce from Sierra Realty. I'm here to drop off your trust deed paperwork." Oddly enough, he was not happy to hear that. And so he chewed on me for a little while. When he got done with the sentence and took a breath, I said, "May I ask you just one question?" He says, "All right." I said, "Do you own a business?" He probably did. He had lived in a $2 million house in 1980 behind a guard gate, and I thought it was a good guess. He says, "Yes, I do." I said, "Last question." One other question. "Do you have any salespeople?" He says, "Yes." "Last question, if you had a salesperson and a part of his job turned out to be pushing this buzzer at 4 in the morning, would you want him to do it?" And you hear this pause. He says, "I'll be right down." When he came to that gate, he wasn't happy, but I noticed a sign of respect in his eyes because I was able to entice him from behind the gate. I got all that paperwork done and I made my money, but it always comes down sometimes to the your ability to persuade people to do what you want them to do. So you have to learn how to become creative sometimes. Sometimes you're going to come up with creative closes when everything's on the line. And some of these are not going to be in a book that you've read, and sometimes they are. One of the closes that I've used came straight from Zig Ziglar in a much different circumstance. He wanted to get a hotel room, came up to the hotel, said, "I'd like a room. My name's Zig Ziglar. Sorry, Mr. Ziglar, there are no rooms." And he tried the normal way to persuade. Didn't work. He said, "Let me ask you a question. Do you consider yourself an honest person?" The woman said, "Yes, I do." She said, "Well," Zig said, "let me ask you. If the President of the United States walked in right now, would you have a room for him?" She said, "You know, certainly, well, if the President came in, we'd have a room for him." He said, "You're an honest woman, I'm an honest man. He's not coming tonight, I'll take his room." When you constantly listen to things like that, you have them somewhere back in your arsenal. I use that exact close in a very important transaction using that exact scenario. And so it's important that we load up all of this in our repertoire, that we might have it available. You look for the seller to open the door of opportunity and react to whatever you're given. And that's very important, that you are not nervous about what you are doing. And once again, I guess I realize now that having a script probably makes that easier once you really have an idea of where you're going every time. But the most important thing to me so far has been that I am available to pay attention to the client, that I'm taking their temperature and that I'm seeing what they are reacting to. And I think that's very important. It's sort of like being a speaker. When you're speaking and you're nervous, the only thing you can concentrate on is yourself. And you don't know what the audience is feeling because you're not available to even look at them. When you get comfortable with it, you actually notice how it's going. And all of that can go on simultaneously. And that's what happens when you're a buyer, is that you have to look for a sign that you've gotten approved. You're in fact going to buy this property. The effect of being creative is you'll close the close ones. And that ultimately makes all the difference, because it seems like in our business there's a lot of close ones. How to improve your creativity: practice without pressure, and intentionally put yourself in situations where you must respond quickly. Number four, successful negotiators can raise their level of intensity. They can increase their level of activity when it's necessary. When I first got to Sierra Realty, I got the chance to become a buyer for that company by opening my big mouth and saying, within 30 days, I can be the best buyer you have. I had no experience. I had no credentials to be hired. I just had a big mouth that got myself a chance. Within 30 days, I had bought 10 houses. I was the best buyer in the company. At least I was the most profitable buyer in the company. Did I have any idea what I was doing? Not really. Not in real estate. I understood I could persuade people. I understood that I had work ethic, because I worked harder than anybody else during those 30 days, I guarantee it. And that was the secret of my success in that period of time, is that I realized that I had to raise my level of intensity to maximum effort to pull this off. But was it worth it? I thought it was, because I thought I could see a way to make every month what I used to make in a year. And when you get your first shot at that kind of money, you get pretty excited. Thursday, I went and bought this suit and a number of other suits at the same store that I went 25 years ago for the first time. And who did we go with? We went with the people that were in that Tin Men movie, all of the buyers and all the salespeople for this company. The Ruthless Group went to this store to buy their suits, so I went along with them, because for the first time in my life, I had lots of extra dough. And it was interesting going back to that store again, because it made me remember the first time that I went. When you raise your level of intensity, you can become very keenly aware of your surroundings. It's like you have heightened senses, and all of a sudden you start noticing things. I am all male when it comes to not noticing things. I was at a wedding last Saturday or Sunday for a friend of mine. My wife has the ability to absorb what people are wearing, down to an earring, a blouse color, a shoe style, and she will not lose it. She can retain that for a year. You can just casually ask her, just by the way, what was Joe Pagliuzzo's wife wearing last year at the wedding? Oh, it was a blue top, and she'll get it. She doesn't know why she remembers it. She absorbs it. Well, that is not me. If you ask me, Bruce, do you have pictures on your wall at the house? I think so. What are they? I don't know. I live there. I'm not sure. I like them, I think. That's why they're probably there. That's me. But when you're at a heightened state and the game, you got your game face on, all of a sudden, there's boxes with tape on them. These people are ready to move, and we got a call. Does that mean something? Yeah, see, for once it does. Now, normally I wouldn't notice that, but when you're in that state of heightened intensity, you start noticing these things. When you raise your level of intensity and you develop a sense of timing, you know when to switch gears into this high gear, if you will, but you also know when it's time not to. I've seen people oversell in situations and get thrown out of a house, and they didn't realize that the low gear was working just fine. As a matter of fact, the person had already said yes, and so you have to be careful about when to use this. What happens to buyers that can't raise their level of intensity is they get out-hustled because they remain in low gear. One of the better buys that I made probably in the first 5 years of my buying career, I got a phone call from a guy who had 5 model homes. He told me the numbers. This is what it's worth. This is what I want. It was a no-brainer purchase. The problem was, he said, they're not finished. They're not finaled. And so you'll have to pick a set of plans up in Costa Mesa. take them to the city of Riverside to make yourself feel comfortable that, in fact, we've had them all inspected. Now, this call came to me at about 9:30 at night at my house. I was still working out of my home. I was doing business still at night. That phone call would never reach me now because I don't do that. But at that time, I was on high intensity level. I was a property buyer 24/7. He said something interesting. He said, you can pick the plans up at 8 o'clock in Costa Mesa. And then as an afterthought, he said, oh, by the way, they're open till midnight. That last comment, I thought, I literally was already in bed, and I thought, I wonder how many of my other competitors have gotten the phone call, and number two, will get out of bed and go pick up the set of plans in Costa Mesa before midnight. Well, naturally, I got out of bed. I went to Costa Mesa, came back with the plans. At 8 o'clock, I was in front of the Riverside Building Department, and a whole pack of other people were in front of the Costa Mesa Plan Department picking up the plans. Guess who won? Do you know how much that was, how much money they missed out on, how costly that mistake was? That was a $250,000 error on their part. So is it worth raising the intensity level once in a while? Yes. Make sure you have that gear. You also have a problem that you let sellers put off decisions if you're not able to raise your effort to the next level. People will try to put you off. Let me think about it. And it takes energy to confront that. I'll admit it. It gets uncomfortable for a little bit, but you have to be able to do it. And they don't grow much because they don't often challenge themselves. All of the people that I work for at Sierra Realty, every one of them is not in this business today. And they were in it for 5 years before I showed up, and they were in it for a couple years after working for this company, but they never did it after that. And it's because they didn't challenge themselves, they didn't grow. How to develop intensity? Take risk when meeting a seller. Especially when you're in this practice without pressure, just try stuff and see what happens and then write it down. Understand, boy, this didn't work well, this did work well. And see if you can make yourself understand what will work, what won't, so you can invest that in the next conversation. Look for a situation that requires maximum effort and pull it off. Nothing feeds your desire to reach the next level than a little success. Something I had hoped was true, and I learned that definitely was, is successful negotiators are honest. Now, there are some successful con men that are rich, successful in the fact that they have money, but I think they have problems that I wouldn't want to have. So true success for me means keeping out of lawsuits. They also have... When you're sitting across from somebody, I get the sense that sellers pick that up. They feel safer, and because of that, they tell you things if you're a straight shooter. That's one of my favorite statements for a seller to tell me is, I don't know why I'm telling you this. I haven't told anybody else. And for me, that's a good sign that I have made this person relax, and they're being truthful with me. Because of you being honest, your reputation will grow, and you get referrals. It also allows you to do business in one area. You don't have to move, get out of town, start somewhere else. I know this has happened to people. This is really true. You can actually have pride in what you do, and you don't have to look over your shoulder when you're shopping or in a store, I sure hope nobody I ever bought a house from shows up. That would be a bad feeling. Number 6, successful negotiators are persistent and determined. Here's the benefits. You'll get your share of good deals. All of the buyers that end up being successful are some of the most persistent and determined people I know. And we're living proof that it's possible, and I want you to get your share of those deals. If you're persistent, you get the deals that most buyers walk away from. There's definitely evidence that you'll have multiple mailers going to the same person. And the regular people, like the Mike Cantu, for instance, will end up buying the house and actually flipping it to somebody that did the same mailer to the house and had the conversation first. What happened? Well, they met up with a more skillful, more determined, more educated closer is what happened. So a lot of times, we are generating the activity that gives results if you're the right person. It's just a process of getting yourself to the right person. If you gradually improve your skill level in all facets of the business, That's one of the benefits of becoming persistent, that you'll end up becoming a pro someday. Okay, turn the page, number 6. If you're not persistent, people will put you off with delay tactics, like I need to think it over, and you won't know how to respond. You'll leave many houses with an unsatisfied feeling, just like that clip. Nothing. That's a very frustrating thing. So you won't buy your share of properties, and eventually, if you don't improve, you'll quit the business. Great negotiators are self-motivated. No one needs to start their engine in the morning. They understand that it's their responsibility, and so they work at that for themselves. They typically are very goal-oriented, so they have a game plan for a day, a week, a month, a year. And even beyond that, they have figured out that that is what gets their engine started. They understand why they're meeting a seller. And yes, they make a personal connection with people, but they also get down to business pretty quickly. They don't like wasting time. They're very hard to discourage, and being self-motivated, because they're self-motivated, they hate wasting time. And so they're very used to asking the right questions before they go out to see a property. One of the frustrating things for me when I was doing boot camps in the small groups was I would listen to people and they would commit to go seeing a property before they had any evidence that it was a worthwhile expenditure of their time. And I could see how that they weren't successful because they literally were just out there being busy, but not busy with the right inventory. The business that we're in has enough disappointment in these different areas that if you're not self-motivated, you'll get discouraged and you'll leave the business. Some of the ways to stay motivated on the bottom of page 6, write a list of goals and have a reason to reach the goals. And sometimes it won't just be for you, it'll be for your family. Whatever motivates you more, make sure it's on the list. And sometimes it's almost good to have something that aggravates you on the list. In the mid-80s, I broke an Achilles tendon playing racquetball, and I was kind of feeling sorry for myself a little bit until I went back to the racquetball court, and the guy that I really didn't like at the club looked at me on the crutches. He said, "What happened to you?" I said, "A broken Achilles tendon." And you know what he said? He says, "Oh, good, that's the end of you." That was very motivating. I knew I would be back on that court playing racquetball against him, as a matter of fact. I knew, because he had just given me all the juice I needed. And so sometimes on the goal sheet, you can put all the nice stuff, but sometimes it's good to put the aggravating stuff there too, because that gets to me. And so whatever works for you, do that. Top of page 7, successful negotiators have a pleasing personality. I was with Tony Alvarez. Now this is perfect Tony. We jointly spoke at an Orange County club a few weeks ago. Now I spoke to the same audience he did, and I think I probably did a good job. You know what happened when Tony left? People hugged him. He's one of the world's huggies. People just hug him. I think they'd have gone on vacation with him. He's just that kind of person. It's very important that you realize that if you aggravate people, and sometimes people do. I got fired 5 times in a row early on in my business career. That's really using it very loosely, because I didn't have any career or any business going on at that point, because I didn't last long enough. I finally figured out I'm irritating the world. I had to work on that. And so people that are successful have these pleasing personalities, and I do think you can develop it to a certain extent. What happens when you are in a position where people like you and that you have this pleasing personality is that you can say things that other people can't get away with. People like you, and they don't want to get angry at you. As a matter of fact, they probably think, you know what, the only reason he would say this is probably because I need to hear it. That is a great position to be in. These people develop long-term relationships because they're likable. Again, Alex, we bought a house from a guy in Riverside. I'm there doing the paperwork. I'm buying a house. Alex, what's he doing? Oh, he's playing with the guy's kids. They're still best friends. This is 20 years later. They go on vacations, on cruises all over the world. Guy's name is Doug Volk. The only reason I remember that, I don't remember even any addresses of properties I bought. I remember Doug Volk because he's Alex's friend. He's not my friend. I bought the house too. I don't think you can hug Doug Volk, but if you could, Alex would be the one to get it. It's funny, but that's just, I've watched some of these people that have this special ability, and it's almost inspiring to be around because they're not trying. It's who they are, and that's what's neat. These type of people also get the breaks when they need special services. Tony called me up over the weekend, and we thought we were going to do a transaction where we needed to fast forward all of the services. I would have needed a preliminary title report in about 4 hours. We could have done it because we have the relationships in place and we haven't abused them, so we could have pulled it off. But it's important to be the kind of person that people will rise to the occasion for, and it helps to have the pleasing personality. They also get the nod from sellers and brokers if their offer is close. There'll be times where, in fact, there are competitive offers, and they're holding this offer, and they're holding your offer, but they like you. This is just feels better. We'll go into escrow with this one because we like that person. That is sometimes the way decisions are made. People make those decisions. I've heard from Tony, from Mike. I've experienced it myself. I have had people hold a higher offer than my offer to buy their house, and they tell me word for word, I would not sell my house to this person because he was a jerk. I'm selling it to you because you've been fair and I like you. For less money. In a person that may be in a financial bind, they still don't want to get treated badly. They want somebody to have a personality that they can get along with. So don't discount the power of having a personality that people like. Last character quality is resilience, the ability to come back after discouragement. This business will test your patience and your endurance. Whether you're buying, repairing, selling, and closing, they all have the potential to cause some grief. And you have to learn to concentrate on solutions. When Greg came to work for the company, it took him a while to realize his dad had changed. He worked for me when he was 18 or 19 years old, and I was not a very nice guy at that time. I was a very driven, one-sided person. I was definitely intense. That's the guy that answers that phone at 9:30 at night. I was doing business. I was doing business at a payphone in Yosemite. I was going to be successful. When you work for somebody like that, that's not fun. Especially when it's your kid, because you think, you know what? I have to show him what it takes. So you have to be the all-star, and you have to work extremely hard. Well, now, Greg, I have Rosamond Project, and we need some help. So Greg takes it over. And for the first few months, every time he had to impart bad news, he was like walking on eggshells. It was, Dad, I have some bad news. And he'd tell me, and there would be no reaction other than, okay, why don't we do this? And it took him for a while to realize this is going to be the normal response when bad news comes up. Because I've taught myself, what is the point of getting excited about the bad news? I go immediately to solution mode. What else is there to do? Let's go solve it. And when people around you know that's what you're built like, you get told the truth quicker. And in our business, that's important. You know, we might have an escrow fallout. Why? Oh, okay, if you know that early enough, maybe you can figure out a way to save it. Sometimes you wait so long because people are afraid to tell you the truth, you never become part of the solution. When things get tough, remember times that you've overcome something like this before. I cannot find my card that I had for years. I used to write down special times. And they're abbreviated. There was a lot of them on the card, but it let me know that I could overcome some things. The Achilles tendon story I just told you was just written, Achilles tendon. You know, I don't need to write the whole story. I know exactly what that means, and that means something to me because that was a good comeback to go play racquetball against that guy in a short period of time. And so there are times when things get tough. It's important to have something in your possession that you can look at and go, oh yeah, I remember now. I'm the person that can overcome this stuff. So have a success card. Call a friend in the business. Maybe they had an even worse day than you. I really love calling Mike Cantu. The guy, he just lives a very exciting life. And he's always got a story. And I hang up the phone for Mike. I just go, I had a good day compared to Mike. If you're not resilient, discouragement sets in. You lose any momentum you had. This is a very important thing. In a book that was written by Jim Collins, he's written two great books, Good to Great and Built to Last. And this is a concept from Built to Last. He says there's something called a flywheel in business. And basically what it is that it's the momentum that a business gains. And in the beginning, it's very hard to get this flywheel pushed in the right direction. And it's just almost impossible to get it started. But once it starts going, it builds momentum of its own. What happens to people in our business is they just get it moving and they change direction. And so they have to start the flywheel all over again. Or they just quit because they're discouraged. They don't realize how close they were to a breakthrough. When you have breakthrough, the flywheel is almost hard to hang on to. If you can picture where this thing starts cranking, how would you slow it down would be the problem. You don't want to get in front of that because it's a juggernaut. It's going. And that's what happens to people in the buying business is a lot of times they've done all of the initial hard work and then they don't keep doing it and they don't follow through. So make sure that you learn to be resilient. It's a very, very important part of our business.